From the Pavilion on Cambridge 105 Radio with Wispar, the mobile app that keeps you up to date with grassroots football in Cambridgeshire. To find out more, visit wispar.com.
Hello, good evening. Welcome to another edition of From the Pavilion. My name is Ollie Slack. Callum Guest is in the studio with myself, and we've got Saucer and Bayram skipper Dan Heath with us as well. We're talking all about Saucer and Bayram and their brilliant start to the season. Double shift for Dan this evening. He's doing the quiz as well, so testing his knowledge. Can he topple Sam Rippington in the Who's the Biggest Badger quiz? We'll see how he gets on later on. Callum will be chatting to our EAPL sides. Unfortunately, no wins this weekend once again. Berwyn Exing got a positive result, a draw against Great Wychingham though. Cambridge and Saffron both lost. Unfortunately, they're sort of propping up the bottom half of the table, if you look at the minute. And of course, after England's brilliant victory on Sunday against India, we'll be talking all about that and the World Cup fixtures to come towards the end of the week as well. So welcome then to From the Pavilion. We are recording this week because I believe Callum is off to do some net bowling on Wednesday, and I'm lucky enough to be, well, I say heading up to Durham. I'm actually lucky enough to watch some cricket, England against New Zealand, so obviously not sure what the result is at the minute. Fingers crossed England are on the way to another victory. Callum, Dan, thanks for coming in again. It was a pretty good win for England, wasn't it, on Sunday? Did well.
Yeah, it was a good win. Obviously, we talk about it every week, putting runs on the board. Creating that pressure. Yeah. And obviously, a bit of a strange chase towards the end by India.
Yeah, I'd say I didn't see much of it. I had to rush in for Summer Sports Week, but I was listening to a programme on the way back on the radio, people phoning in saying India threw it away deliberately because they didn't want Pakistan to qualify. You're not buying that, Dan?
No, I'm not buying that. No, I mean, it was a strange ending, I have to say. I had it on the radio yesterday, travelling back from a game, and it sounded like a very, very strange chase. There was talk about some stats about Dhoni, how his strike, his per 100 ball strike in the last 4 years is one of the slowest, which surprised me because he's got a bit of a reputation for being the great finisher. But I guess he's just lulling everyone into a false sense of security.
Like I say, you'd think with sort of Pandya and Dhoni, the man who is meant to be one of the great white ball finishers, they'd get a bit closer than it was. But they just seemed to sort of stumble. And the score, I was looking at it, and it never really seemed to move. And I was surprised then when I saw the winning margin of about 30-odd runs in the end.
I think they're very strong up top, and it's very hard to sit here and criticise India's batting lineup. But have they got the power hitters coming at the end? Probably not. If you look at England's lineup, you could arguably say they're back down to number 11, whereas India's has got quite a long tail, and if Dhoni doesn't come off at the end, then they're kind of looking a bit short, to be honest.
Yeah, it makes me laugh. The sort of, I wouldn't say, it's sort of patronising comments towards England's batting lineup because they do bat so deep. Whenever Adil Rashid walks the crease, they always say, well, he has got a few first-class hundreds, and he can bat this lad. Always say when he's on the World Cup matches. But if there is any local club to criticise a team's batting performances, I guess it is Saucer and Bayram. Easy picking so far, isn't it? Down top of the league after 9 games. Obviously, a lot of talk at the start of the season from, I guess, other clubs and yourself about being favourites, but faultless so far.
Yeah, I mean, lots of talk is right. We've done really, really well, and I think it's easy to look at results and look how we've done and, you know, to presume that teams roll over and it's been easy. But we're playing good cricket within that as well, and I think that everyone's contributed, which is key. I think we've got obviously some real big names in terms of local cricket, but what's nice is that the other not-so-big names have also contributed heavily. And, you know, I can safely say out of a squad of about 12, 13, 14, that everyone has contributed to at least one win at some point this season, which is great. And, you know, it's a cliche, but we're only halfway and still got a bit of, you know, another second half of the season to come and a lot of cricket to be played. So we just got to keep doing what we're doing, and who knows what may happen, really.
Yeah, the weekend just gone was one of those performances which sort of fitted how many have gone throughout the season, against Fox, and putting runs on the board early on winning the toss and batting 307 for 7, then bowling up 442. It's been that sort of way the whole time. I mean, I think I was talking to Ben last week when he did the, or a couple weeks ago when he did the Badger quiz, and he was saying that about the batting, and I was saying I think you batted in about batted first in 5 out of the 6, and it's probably now something like 6 out of the 7 or 7 out of the 8. Is that a clear tactic from you, or is it just the way it's felt that way?
I guess so. I mean, look, I've pretty much won every toss where we batted first, apart from one where we were inserted against Cambridge and then we got 280. So I think every time we batted first, I think 280's been our lowest score. So look, we do bat low down. We've said that we bat all the way down. Not that we've had to so far this season. It's a clear strength of ours that we've got a lot of strength in our batting. And I wouldn't say it's necessarily a tactic. I just feel that when you've got the kind of firepower that we do have, that, you know, if you get anywhere over 220, 230, 240, and you don't lose many games. And the fact that we're kicking on that bit further, and just, I think, mentally for the opposition, when they see you get close to 300, you know, the games sometimes can be over halfway. Obviously, we don't go in with that mindset because you just never know. But, you know, we've got such a positive mindset in the team that I think if we got less than 280 right now, it might feel like a bit of a failure, to be honest.
I was going to say, because we're expecting to see 300-plus scores at international level, but over the last 2 years since doing the show, I've rarely sat here and seen 280 scores so consistently. And like I say, that must, I guess, psychologically damage sides coming into games against you, knowing that anyone in that 11 can bat.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, look, the kind of top three is, yeah, as far as I'm concerned, the best three batsmen in the league, and that's where I see our top three with Wakas, Haggy and Cow. And if that's how we look at it, I'm sure other teams possibly look at it that way as well. And then you've got people like Alex Stafford who've had, apart from this week, yeah, back-to-back hundreds, you know, like, and you've got Tim Moses coming in and Ben himself and then Jimmy and sometimes me, not very often, but sometimes, you know, like we like to think we back quite low down, and yeah, it must be hard for teams. Like we do think in this league that most teams have got two or three really good players, and then you kind of back yourself. Then if you get a bit of momentum and you're on a roll, that, you know, you can take 3, 4, 5, 6 quick wickets. But we've got that luxury of, we like to think that even if the chips are down and we are struggling. I mean, to be honest with you, the game we possibly struggled the most is the one time we've chased, and that was at home to Ramsey, where although in hindsight, I think we won by 5 wickets, but that's probably the only time so far this season where we've had to use that depth a bit more. But yeah, I'd like to think teams, when they look at our lineup and see us on a Saturday, you know, we've done a lot of damage before the game's even started, really.
Yeah, I'm sure if a struggle is winning by 5 wickets, then you'll probably win more games than you lose. Callum, how does it feel to be in that, I guess, that band lineup that's scoring, you know, 280, 300 most weeks? I guess there's less pressure on you because, you know, guys around you can fire as well.
No, it is fantastic. I think massive importance comes down when we do bat first is that first 20 overs. I think, as Dan rightly says, when the chips go down and the heads go down quite quickly, if they know we're only 1 or 2 wickets down after 20 overs. And then from there we can kick on. The next 15 overs is obviously crucial. And then obviously that sets a platform for the big boys at the end to come in and give it a whack, which they've done brilliantly this year. So that's what's got us up to them massive scores. But also, I think going back to the original point of us being favourites, we've seen in the World Cup, you know, you could be, England have been favourites for what, a good year or so now, to win the World Cup, and it's not as easy as what it looks. So I think the fact we're making it at the moment look so comfortable is a credit to, you know, the squad of 13, 14 players that are playing.
Do you think that's why it's worked so well, two set totals? Because Kohli, I think, mentioned at the start of the World Cup that scores, I think he was asked if scores would ever get to 400, and he said probably unlikely because of the pressure of the World Cup, and he thinks scores would actually be probably less than 300 most times, and he's proven to be right. England have struggled to chase in this World Cup despite, you know, being, you know, well known and number one side in the world for chasing so well. But I guess batting first, it relieves a lot of, or you don't have that scoreboard pressure when you do chase. And do you think that sort of worked with yourselves, and that because of this favourites tag, you've managed to sort of banish it a bit by the fact that you're setting totals rather than chasing?
I think from my point of view, it's almost like you've got, you know how to go out. If you're setting a total, there's only one, you go and play your natural game, and you go and, you know, you go and play how you can for 50 overs. Whereas when you're sometimes chasing, when we struggled against Ramsey, we're chasing 130, an underpar score on a good deck. It was kind of like people were stuck in between on how to go for it. I mean, you don't want to get caught mid-off trying to hit over the top when you need so little runs to score in a 50-over match. So I think it's that. But also I think it's almost like we've got two separate teams. You've got your batting lineup, which the 11 boys bat, and then you go and set a total of 50 overs, and then it's almost like you hand over to the bowling and fielding lineup, and you say, look, now it's time to go and get 10 wickets. And I think that's really, you know, that added a bit of pressure of having to go and take 10 wickets to get the maximum points has really benefited us.
I agree. So I just also feel like a favourites tag can work two ways, and I think that you can either embrace it and want to be that and want other teams to see you as that, and you can carry yourself in a way that you feel like you are that side, or it can go the other way, which possibly has happened to England, where that extra bit of added pressure of right now finally we're in something that matters has maybe made them crumble a little bit. And I think we spoke about it before the season as one of the things that as a team that we knew that no doubt whatever happened people would be talking about us and expect us to be favourites, and it was something that we were proud of as opposed to were worried by, and we want to be that team, whether that's how we arrive to games, how we prepare for games, whatever we do, we want to be that team. And I think that's one thing that suits a lot of the personalities in our squad, that they're confident lads and they want to be that team. So
yeah, I think definitely, I'm obviously talking to you a lot about the start of the season, and speaking to you, Callum, as well, when we did the season preview, not just obviously yourselves, but other people as well, sort of naming you as favourites. And I was surprised that, I was sort of half expecting maybe you guys to sort of say, now, you know, we're not, there's lots of other teams and other good teams in the league, as you sort of normally would expect people to do, but there was none of that. You know, you guys were clearly aware that you were favourites, and I guess, like you said, it's then making sure that you don't dip below those standards, so then it almost sets a barrier as to how you can play. And yeah, I mean, just looking at the table so far, we see about 50 odd points ahead of Eton and Soken, who you'd probably say are your main challenges for the title.
No, absolutely. They've got a few standout players that perform pretty much week in, week out for them. And obviously we got a good result against them a couple of weeks ago, which was crucial to the, you know, setting that kind of, we've got a bit of leeway in between. But as I've said to Dan, there's going to be match abandons and stuff like that. We've been a bit frustrated. You know, we rained off against March. But all we can do is go out and win. You know, if it's 30 points, if it's 25 points, if we go out and win every game from now to the end of the season, we're in that playoff spot. So, you know, that's our aim in every game, whatever 11's out on the pitch for us. And that's all we can do.
Yeah, Dan, is it easy as a captain having all the options in front of you, or is it slightly more difficult?
Is it easy? Look, the batting order, it pretty much picks itself, to be honest with you. I mean, there is subtle changes that we can make here and there, and we made changes at the weekend where the situation allowed for us to promote guys and move guys about. I don't think so. I feel like that there's an awareness and an understanding within the team of what the goal is this year. And if people feel like they perhaps aren't getting a game, so to speak, and they're not getting a fair crack of the whip, well, that's kind of not what we want to be this year. Like, we want to be the best we can be and progress the club and take the club forward. And if that means that someone doesn't necessarily get their fair crack one week, then that's kind of just how it is. That's cricket, unfortunately. And I guess also the level we play at, like, you know, a lot of lads do both skills. It's very rare that you get people that just bat or just bowl. It's just the level that we play at that everyone contributes. So, no, not really. It's quite nice to have so many different options, and we've got a clear model, especially in the field, of what we like to do and how we play it. And we're very lucky to have the kind of options that I do have, really.
Yeah, and looking at the fixtures to come, like you said, Triplo this weekend. And then I believe, if Play Cricket is right, 3 weeks off, so 2 weekends off. Obviously, this debacle about the Once Upon a Divisions and I think God Manchester dropping out mean you have just 9 teams in the league. So, what, that's only 16 games. Something you weren't particularly happy about, Dan. Fast forward to April or March 2020, what would you like to see in the Whitehead Partners Divisions?
Well, look, you can't help teams dropping out. Whether you agree with the reasons for it and what happens, that's kind of neither here nor there. It's not our business, the reason why God Manchester decided to do that. And to be fair, though, the break that we do have, one game we move with Ramsey to help them out to start the season, so that's 1 week. The following week, God Manchester pulled out. Not much we can do about that. Then we got a game. And the week after that, we got a game again because we decided to move that game. So a lot of it's self-inflicted, as frustrating as it is. But changes going forward. That's a good question, really. Like, there's been a few options that have been discussed, and I think that any change is probably better than the current product that there is. I do feel that it's been a bit reactive to the situation, not been proactive. I think multi-format is something that should be considered, because look, T20 cricket's here to stay, and it's arguably our most popular format nationwide. So to embrace that in some way, you have to do that. So for my mind, something that's multi-format, whether that's 50 overs like we've currently got for the first part of the season, whites and red ball, a middle section of T20 cricket with colour kits and pink ball, and then finishing off with red ball cricket again at the end, that to me is probably quite an attractive prospect. Hopefully it's something that we don't have to necessarily worry about. If things go the way we want them to go, that, you know, we'll be going into a strong competition, hopefully like the Premier League, and, you know, then things are kind of sorted out for you. But like, it's clearly obvious that a change needs to happen. I feel a change probably will be afoot to improve the strength and the quality of the league, and I think a proactive feel and trying something rather than just carrying on with what's happening, because it's clearly not working, is the way forward.
I was going to say, and just lastly then, before we go to a quick break, from a player's perspective, for you, Callum and Dan, what are the key things you want? Because I imagine part of you has to look at the future and how do you keep the game of cricket alive, but equally, you don't want to sort of almost see what we're seeing with the ECB in certain competitions at the minute. They're neglecting the current fan base of cricket. What are the key things for you? Is it the time? You don't want to be spending all day on Saturday playing cricket? Is it you don't want to be travelling miles out your way to play cricket? What are the key things that you would like to see change?
I think for me, it comes down to at the moment, my main issue with the league we're in at the moment is actually comes down to the start times of the games. We start at 12:30, and on a Saturday morning, most people are probably not doing too much anyway. So could we move the time of the game further forward? And then that would maybe enable, you know, longer formats like they're playing the APL, like an 11 a.m. start, and then go from there and work from there. I feel like the 12:30 starts make it a really long day. For example, Saturday, you know, it could go until 8, 9 o'clock, and especially with rain delays. We had one against Triplo early on in the season where we're still bowling balls at 9:15 when it's been raining, and it was just it was a little bit ridiculous. Yeah. Where an earlier start, you might miss that rain break, or it might come, and then you know, even with a rain delay, you're only going up till 6, 7 o'clock. And then you can go from there.
Yeah, I think also you're probably talking to two people at a club, which probably is not the norm right now. We're at a club where we've got lads that do want to play cricket and want to play a good level of cricket and want to do these things. And
it sounds like you want to play the longer format, which I guess is possibly not what the new generation of cricketers might want.
Well, I think that, like I say, it seems to be each club, what each player wants is very different. So I don't think you're ever going to get a format or a system that suits everybody. I think every club is different. I get frustrated because, like, for me, if cricket's what I play during the year, I want to commit my summer to playing cricket. I feel that that's not replicated everywhere, which is fine, it's fair enough, but like, I don't understand giving up your time to play and then games are called off easily and you lose games and never get them back, and it just seems like a lot of effort for
sort of halfway house sort of thing.
Absolutely. I say you're never going to please everybody with the format. We're at a club where we want to play as much cricket as we possibly can. We play Saturdays, we'll play Sundays if we can. Our Wednesday midweek team's very strong, like, we're very lucky with that, but we're a team of everyone aged roughly between 21 and 32, so we're at the prime age in terms of playing cricket. Maybe if you ask that question again in 4 or 5 years, you might get a slightly different answer from us, which is where other teams might be at right now. So the changes, I just think the format changes to make it more interesting for people to replicate what they see on the telly. I know it might seem not very much colour kit, but if I was a kid and I looked at a field and I saw blokes in whites trotting around, all of a sudden you change that to a really smart colour kit with your name and number on the back, it does make a difference. It does make it more appealing because the kids can relate that to what they see or perceive as cooler cricket. So that's kind of how I see it.
Yeah, and if you got, especially, I guess, at your level, there's going to be more, the average age is going to be probably your high 20s, sort of 30s, whereas down at Bluntisham, not very often you get many in the high 20s. So then you plus the fact you've then got older men in white gear and kids who walk around on the boundary looking at it, they're probably not going to be that enticed to playing cricket.
Like I say, like each level's different, each club is different. Like, what appeals to each person is very different. But like I said, to be reactive now would be not great. I think it's time to be proactive and put ideas forwards, because you've really not got nothing to lose. Like, cricket, about standing two down, is not in the strongest and best state it's ever been, for whatever reason that might be. So look, let's put something new on the table. What have you got to lose, really? And if that does mean colour kits, if that does mean earlier starts, if that does mean T20 cricket rather than 40 over cricket, whatever it might be. Let's be more accommodating to all rather than saying this is our format, this is how we play it, and this is what we do.
Yeah, it's a really interesting debate, and one that I'd love to have over 3 hours, let alone 20 minutes at the start of a show. Thanks, Dan and Callum. We'll get more from you and test your cricket knowledge, Dan, after this.
From the Pavilion on Cambridge 105 Radio with Wispar, the mobile app that keeps you up to date with grassroots football in Cambridgeshire. To find out more, visit wispar.com.
Welcome back to From the Pavilion with myself, Callum Guest, and Ollie Slack. We are now going to do an EAPL roundup from Saturday's games, and I'm delighted to say I'm joined by Burwell captain Joe Tetley. How are we doing, Joe?
I'm very well, mate. Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. So it's another draw on Saturday, but a closer game than the previous week, and one that you managed to get 16 points out of. Are you happy with that?
Yeah. I mean, as you can tell, the scores are quite high, quite a good game. I mean, 300 plays, 270-80-odd. The wicket was just too flat, I think, to get a result, unless someone was going to chase it down. Yeah, I don't think they went early enough, but... yeah, good game. Good game to be involved in.
Is it one of those that obviously you put a massive emphasis on batting first and putting a massive score on the board? So I suppose the positives are, I mean, there was another 100 scored by your overseas import, Tom Jaggett. I suppose it's good having a few batters in good nick going into the middle part of the season.
Yeah, something we did well at the start of last year as well. We had someone that kicked on every game. Someone got a 50, someone got 100. And I think we're starting to do that again. And as you can see with our scores, we always pull out a good score. We haven't chased well this year, which is a disappointing thing, and potentially might have chased in certain games, but if we do keep batting, it puts pressure on, and hopefully we can just bowl at it like we did this week and make a result go our way a little bit more.
Yeah, as you speak, this weekend you're away at bottom of the table, Vauxhall Mallards. I suppose, is it important you don't underestimate them? As you've seen a couple of weeks ago, they turned over your local rivals, Cambridge. So is that of real importance for you this week?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a must win. I think you start winning these sort of games where you're leaving them down below you and winning the odd game against the top of the table. So if we can keep doing that, we'll be comfortably like mid-table like we were last year. And it only takes a couple of results. It's so tight in the middle. So these are must-win games and makes it a lot easier for the rest of the year.
That's brilliant. Thanks for joining us, Tet. Good luck on Saturday, mate.
No worries, mate. G, bud. Cheers.
From the Pavilion on Cambridge 105 Radio with Wispar, the mobile app that keeps you up to date with grassroots football in Cambridgeshire. To find out more, visit wispar.com.
Welcome back to From the Pavilion here on Cambridge 105 Radio. That was Joe Tetley, Burn Exton, Skipper, talking to us then.
And I'm joined by Saffron and Morning captain Ben Harris, who joins us on the phone after his side were beaten away at Bury St Edmunds. Chasing 280 at the halfway stage, Saffron and Warden were bowled out for 249. A difficult day on Saturday, Ben. How would you sum it up, mate?
Yeah, frustrating day, Gusty. You know, frustrating that we were in a position where we could have won it. But you know, that's cricket. And one side has to lose. So yeah, ultimately we didn't quite perform as well as we could have. And ultimately we didn't get the result.
Obviously, a brilliant partnership in the middle of 109 between yourself and Finn Carsten. Was it a case of one of you needing to be there at the end to see yourself over the line?
Yeah, 100%. We both played rash shots, which was frustrating considering we've got the run rate, you know, well under control, less than a run a ball. With six wickets left, should be pretty straightforward, I think. You know, it's just a question of batting time, waiting for the bad balls and taking singles when you can. And I just think, you know, a bit of inexperience and a bit of lacking concentration cost us dearly, yeah.
As a positive, you've picked up seven more points and seem to be steering yourself well clear of bottom place, Vauxhall Mallards. Where would you see your ambitions were off for the rest of the season?
Yeah, look, I don't think we, in all honesty, I don't think we need to worry about that. I think there's been the more worrying point is the fact that we've got ourselves in position to win games and not quite got over the line. And whether that's lack of experience of playing Premier League cricket through us having a young side, or us not quite having the required skill set or the practice at the moment to compete the job. But look, that's going to come. You know, it's really encouraging. I think just looking at last weekend's result against Swarton when we turned over probably one of the top five teams in the country is a testament to what we can achieve. So yeah, no, it's all positive.
And it's another team this weekend that you are away at in Mildenhall, a team that you've already beaten once this season already. So I suppose you're going to be positive going into the game. How are you going to look to approach it?
Yeah, look, it'd be fantastic to go back-to-back. It's one thing I said to the lads after Saturday. You know, they were all pretty disappointed. But I said that it's the beauty of this league is that we get to play everyone twice. So those teams that beat us, we've got a chance of getting revenge. And those teams that we've won, we've got a chance to go back-to-back. But Mildenhall have found real good form of late. So, you know, they're a good side with some really quality cricketers with plenty of experience. So we're going to have to be on our A game.
Top man, thank you for joining us. Good luck Saturday, mate.
Hold up, Ben. Thanks, your mate Dan wants to ask you a quick question. So off we go, Dan.
Hello, mate.
Evening.
You're one of the most destructive batsmen in the league. How do you go about playing the way that you do?
Close my eyes and swing.
Well done, mate. Good answer.
All right, bye.
Thanks, Ben. Cheers, mate. Oh, hung up before we even had a chance to say goodbye. He needs to get back to his date. Right, that was Ben Harris there from Saffron Walden. Unfortunately, lost to Bryce Edmund, but up against Mildenhall this weekend. Right, Dan, the precious turn to you now. We're going to quiz your cricketing knowledge. Do you understand the rules? Have you, obviously, avid listener of the show every week.
Oh, so sure.
We'll give you 1 minute to answer as many questions as you can. Your score in that round, you'll have a chance to double that with every correct answer you get in naming a top 10. So, for example, we'll get a minute, 1 minute round, and then you'll have a top 10 table to answer. And like I said, every answer you get right will double your score, which you got in the 1 minute round. So,
I can pass in that.
Yeah. We're not on the table.
I can declare though.
I don't know the
answer.
Yeah, exactly.
I've asked this before.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you've done it for the New Year's Day quiz.
Sure.
Sam Ripperton's at the top with 28. I believe the next best is James Williams with 24, and then I think four ducks from there, so no pressure. Last week Ben Seabrook got a decent, I think got 5 in the 1 minute round, but then went Ravi Bapara with his second answer in naming England's T20 final team against Australia back in 2010. So unfortunately he pretty much named every other player onwards from there, but fell Ravi Bapara. Right, are you ready for your 1 minute round?
Let's go for it.
Callum's got the answers and we're sort of
lovely
all snug in Studio B, so he's making sure you can't see them. Anyway, right, I'm going to start the clock and it will start and ask your first question. Ready?
Yeah, go.
Cool. Your clock starts now. Who is bottom currently of the EAPL?
Vauxhall Mallards.
Correct. Name one of the players in the County Championship Division 1 to hit a ton in the latest round of fixtures.
James Hildreth.
Correct. Which Australian media tycoon is best known for founding the breakaway World Series between...
Kevin Packer.
Correct. Which Sri Lankan scored their maiden 100 against the West Indies on Monday?
Pass.
Which former England batsman announced his retirement this week?
Marcus Trzaskowski.
Correct. Who is the most runs sourced in Abraham in all matches this season?
Matthew Haig.
Correct. Which England captain was the first Test outfielder to take 100 catches?
Andrew Strauss.
Wally Hammond. Who has won the County Championship the most times?
Yorkshire.
Correct. Who's taken the most wickets in Whitings and Partners 1 this season so far?
Oh, that's a tough one. Joe Dorban.
Josh Brown. Which international cricket ground is famously situated next to a fort?
Pass.
It was a Gaul in Sri Lanka, unfortunately. What do you get, Cal?
Six
answers. So
is that good or not?
That's very good.
Yeah,
is it?
A very good score of 6 there.
Badge.
So so moving on to your top 10 table, England take on New Zealand today, or are currently taking on New Zealand today, because of course we are on Wednesday. So I want you to name the top 10 run scorers for New Zealand in one day international cricket of all time. Like I say, you can declare, but you cannot pass any answer, and if you get one wrong, you'll lose all your points. So just remind us what Dan got in the 1 minute round, Callum.
He got 6.
6. So your first answer is for 6 points.
Brendan McCullum.
He is. Brendan McCullum is on there yet?
Stephen Fleming.
Correct, yes. He is in there, second in the list.
Taylor.
He is there too. Top of the list with 8,259.
Oh, Neil. Oh, I got one, but I don't want to risk it. I'm scared to risk it.
So you've got three so far?
How many points have I got altogether?
18, I believe.
Disaster.
So you said Taylor, Fleming and McCullum so far. Where's your mind thinking? What era are you thinking?
Got to go two more.
Recent. I was thinking Guptill.
Final answer?
Duh. Yes.
He's fourth on the list. 6,598.
Oh, this is
24
rogue.
Now.
Chris Cairns.
Finally, there's two Cairns, but Chris Cairns is seventh on the list.
Yeah.
Five right.
Oh, I declare. I've done. I've literally run out of ideas.
Really? Final? Going to risk one more or happy with top spot?
Nah, I do. I'm declaring, chap.
Declaring. So, if my maths is correct, that is 30 points.
Yes.
So, we have a new leader at the top. Who's the biggest
30
budget?
30 points for Sawston.
Actually, isn't it? Go on then. If you're going to risk another one, who would you have said?
Blimey.
There is a...
I don't have the table in front of me, but I'd go Martin Crowe.
Oh, yeah, that's a good shout.
Ninth on the list.
Ooh.
There is an obvious one, and I know it's easy sitting here when I've got the table in front of me.
Williamson.
Oh, yeah.
Just below Brendan McCullum,
yeah, that's
sixth.
Ridiculous.
I think you've just got a couple more, three more to name now. I can run through them if you want. Of course, Taylor is top, 8,259. Fleming, second, 8,007. Astle is third with 7,090. Martin Guptill, fourth with 6,598. Brendan McCullum, 6,083. Got there in the end. Kane Williamson, 6,008. Cairns with 4,881. Then you've got McMillan with 4,707. Martin Crowe, as Callum said, 4,704. And then Styris coming in 10th position, 4,483. Any ones you think you should have got there? Or
Williamson, obviously. Just mine's gone blank there. Styrus is a bit of a rogue one. Maybe you could have got him in there.
The next, interesting, the next current New Zealand player is down 17th, Tom Latham with 2,430. And I was surprised to see Daniel Vettori at 21st as well with 2,201, above Grant Elliott.
I'll take that, though.
Vettori would have played probably about four times.
Yeah,
games.
Yeah, he has played at 18 years of cricket for New Zealand. Yeah.
Another dirty 30, though.
So. Yeah. Happy with that, then?
Oh, buzzing.
Brilliant. Right, well, up next, we'll go to the track and some other breaks, and then we'll talk England, their victory over India, try and predict how they're getting on today against New Zealand, but also talk about the World Cup as a whole.
Cambridge 105 Radio. From the Pavilion on Cambridge 105 Radio with Wispar, the mobile app that keeps you up to date with grassroots football in Cambridgeshire. To find out more, visit wispar.com.
Welcome back to From the Pavilion with myself, Callum Guest and Ollie Slack. I'm joined by Johnny Atkinson, player from Cambridge Cricket Club, who joins us on the phone after they're beaten at home by league leaders Frinton-on-Sea. A loss on Saturday, Johnny. Were you outplayed, underperformed, or a bit of both?
A bit of both, I think. We won the toss and batted first on what we thought was quite a flat deck. But it was quite deceiving, the wicket, and it wasn't as flat as we initially thought. It was quite hard to time the ball. It was quite two-paced and not much bounce in it either. So none of the batsmen looked particularly fluent on there. There's some soft dismissals alongside some good bowling, so we were probably under par by, I'd say, about 50 or so. We thought we were in with a chance, and it proved to be quite a tight game. The class that they've got in their team is hard to compete with, and they even though we took a few early wickets, they had some really good players to come in sort of lower middle order, so it's always going to be a tough task.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. I mean, you only put 1-3-1 on the board, but your bowlers were fantastic again after a blip last week. Obviously, Peter Young, husband, you're overseas, took 4 for 57, and then you had Zim Akhtar bowled 16 overs up front and he went for 18 runs, so obviously they kept you in the game there. Done very well.
Yeah, it showed how hard the wicket was to score on. And they've Frinton obviously top of the league, and we did really well to restrict them. And we actually had a long chat, sort of open chat before the game, and talked about where we wanted our season to go and how we wanted to improve. And one of the main areas was the consistency of our bowlers, and they really showed that, especially Zam and some of the others, showed what we are capable of. So there's actually lots of positives to come out of the game, and for them to take however many, like nearly 60 overs to chase down 130, was a great effort from us to restrict them from that. And actually, if we could have got a few more runs on the board or batted all of our overs out, I think we could have got potentially a winning draw or even a bit more. So to restrict Frinton to that, we've done very well, and we know where we need to improve our batting. I think we need to dig in a bit more and not gift our wicket away, and maybe like sort of adjust to the pitch a bit more. So lots of positives.
Yeah, I was just going to say that to you. How's the team feeling after a tough few weeks for yourselves? Obviously, you're still 43 points ahead of Vauxhall Mallard, who occupied a sole relegation place. So, you know, where are you looking to really improve, and, you know, look forward to this weekend where you host reigning champion Sudbury?
Yeah, we've had a bit of a tough time recently. If you were to sort of come amongst the team and stuff, you wouldn't think that we're near the bottom. We're still quite upbeat, and we don't think that we deserve to be near the bottom with the sort of class we've got. It's hard because when you lose a few games, it's hard to get out of that. So we do just need a win just to sort of change our momentum and get us into a bit of a positive frame of mind. So it's frustrating, but we know we shouldn't be there. So and it's only halfway through the season. We've got a long time left, and we know if we get a bit of a run going, then hopefully we can work our way back up the table quite quickly.
That's brilliant. Thank you for joining us tonight, mate, and good luck Saturday.
No worries at all. Good.
What are you cooking, mate?
What?
It's a key feature. The listeners want to know.
Key feature. Yeah, all right. Well, I'm actually cooking. I cooked a Slimming World dish tonight. Diet Cola chicken.
I prefer flan.
Shredding for the wedding. So, I've put a bit of timber on recently. So
I thought that on Friday night, mate. To be fair,
you can tell on radio. Yeah.
To be honest, that picture.
Yeah, face for radio.
The spotlight was always on me, chap.
Yeah. So any menus or recipes, just slide into my DMs and I'll help you out.
Cool. The listeners will definitely. Instead of reading out our Cambridge 105 radio text number at the start, I'll just read out your number, Johnny, and they can always get
perfect.
Perfect. Cheers, Johnny, mate.
See you, mate.
All right, bye.
And for anyone who wasn't aware, Dan was at Newmarket Nights with Johnny on Friday night, so they weren't just obviously meeting up randomly because obviously they're, well, probably going to be arch rivals next year. Right, let's move on to the World Cup then. And Sunday was good, wasn't it? England beating India emphatically. Jason Roy coming back, I guess that just shows how important he is to the side.
Yeah, I think with Jason Roy, the kind of impact he has is when he walks out to bat. Just carries himself in such a way which it must be intimidating to play against. He's a big bloke and he's very confident, and you know that kind of, I felt like England were missing that. That's not James Vincent anyway, and I'm not suggesting that he's to blame in any way for how England play, but he could not be further away from the player that Jason Roy is. So it's just a bit of muddle thinking in my opinion in terms of that selection of you know, changing Jason Roy for James Vincent. But that's a different question. I think having Roy back in the side made such a difference, and you know, Bairstow batted with confidence. I think because of that as well, he felt like he'd have a partner that could match him in terms of how he played. And they teamed up together and it was just, the perfect result really. Really puts their campaign back on track, really.
Yeah, we obviously don't know how they're getting on today against New Zealand. Fingers crossed it's going well. Do England bat first every time now if they win the toss?
I think it looks that way, doesn't it? I suppose it comes down to the wicket as well. I think we've seen them previously when it's a bit, you know, green. Obviously, Durham today.
Yeah, today.
It could be a very interesting wicket. You're not sure how it's going to play up north. They tend to get slightly different weather to what we get down south. So, you know, it comes down to the conditions as well. I think that plays an importance. But obviously, if you're 50-50, if it's a 50-50 toss-up for Morgan, you've got to favour batting first.
Mm. Yeah, obviously, the game on Monday at Durham, Sri Lanka, West Indies, produced obviously over 600 runs between it. So we're not obviously sure whether England are going to play on a used wicket or a fresh one. I'm not entirely sure. But in terms of the World Cup table, how do England go about this? Because it's a situation almost we've seen in sort of football World Cups of the year in terms of trying to get a better semi-final draw. Do England worry about that and think if we win here and do this and that, we might get this? Or do they just win and hope for the best?
They just got to win and hope for the best. I heard the radio yesterday that I think England have won their last 13 games at Edgbaston. And I think if, I don't know what the situation is, but if they, somehow they seem to think that by playing India, it would be at Edgbaston. I don't know if that's second verse.
So if they beat New Zealand, if they beat New Zealand and I think assuming Australia win their game, and I imagine India finish second, so it'll be India second, England third, then we'll play them at Edgbaston.
Yeah, so that's obviously something that worked well for them. Yeah, on Sunday. And I don't see why not. But I don't think the England team should fear anybody, really. To be honest with you, Australia would be the team to fear right now. They just seem to have clicked. They just seem to have got, with Stark, they've got a weapon they can bring on at any point and just seem to take at least one wicket, if not two. So England won't be thinking about anybody else. If they means they have to play Edgbaston again and try and go 14 or 15 wins on the bounce, then I'm sure they'll be happy to do that.
Yeah, it's a really tricky one. And I guess we were speaking last week a bit about Australia, how it's almost perfect timing because there's been no expectation on them because of how they've built over the last 12 months. And it's been perfect for them to come into this tournament with no pressure at all. And in their performances are showing that. Callum, you mentioned last week Liam Plunkett should come into the side for Moeen Ali.
I was right, wasn't
I? Put your head of selector, yeah.
Pretty much, yeah. Give me a job.
Clever bloke.
No, yeah. I just said he offers that something different, doesn't he? And he showed again his importance of taking wickets in the middle period is crucial, especially if we set a big total as well. I think no matter what happens, you've got to take wickets. You know, the likes of Kohli and stuff like that, if they got in, could have been a completely different game.
Yeah, completely. And like, we did touch on earlier a bit about India possibly losing deliberately because of certain rivalry with Pakistan. How will that loss on Sunday impact them? Will they worry too much? Because they looked immaculate before then, didn't they?
Yeah, I doubt it. I mean, Kohli is the team is a reflection of Kohli, and Kohli is a reflection of the team half the time. And however he is, they seem to carry themselves in the same way. After the game, he's obviously been criticised for moaning about the boundary size, which is just ludicrous, really.
Do you think that's him deflecting away from his players, maybe?
I just think he's a bit of a muppet, really, sometimes.
It's the old Jose Mourinho. Yeah, absolutely. You tend to do that. But, yeah, it's one of those, isn't it, really?
It's a weird one because England could, I mean, the four teams, assuming it's Australia, India, New Zealand and England in the semi-finals on their day, anyone could beat anyone.
Sometimes a loss in the World Cup as well is actually a good thing for a team. You know, it makes them look, you know, they then look and have a real reflection on what the team is. You know, you're not all perfect. Did they get it right at the start? We got off to an absolute flyer for the first 20 overs. He pretty much bowled your house, I think, 7 overs in the first 20. And he was going at a good 10 and over. So has he got that right? Is it a way of, you know... So then if we did face him in the semi-finals, maybe at Edgbaston, the same ground, he can put a wrong right and, you know, potentially do something different.
Yeah, it's really interesting how it's changed so quickly because 2 games ago we were saying New Zealand look completely, you know, like they're going to go through and 100% record. They've now lost 2 games and England lost 3. Assuming, well, if England beat New Zealand today, then it could be complete role reverse. And New Zealand are going into this last 4 with a pretty patchy form, with 3 losses on the bounce. So it shows you how quickly it can change. In terms of the World Cup as a whole, a bit of talk about the sort of the ticket prices, lots of empty seats, especially at some of the earlier games. And I know you mentioned as well, Dan, about highlights being on at midnight, which is obviously great for kids. Is this, again, cricket, another example where it just doesn't help itself?
Absolutely. Like, I don't know, the format, I don't know if I've been a big fan of this format, really. I understand that you're probably going to get the best team that's going to win it in the end. But for me, anything world-based should be world-based. And I used to love seeing, who was that big geezer that took that diving catch that time?
Bermuda, wasn't it?
Yeah, Dwayne Leverock. Yeah, like, that's brilliant. That's a World Cup for me. This format, for me, has got Champions Trophy written all over it. And that's how I see it. But it doesn't help itself. It really, really doesn't. I mean, to think yesterday the crowd was like 85% Indian at an English World Cup is crazy. There's something not quite right about that. But yeah, it doesn't help itself. It doesn't help itself in any way. It is the greatest opportunity to spread the game. And I don't even know how you can watch it if you've not got Sky. Is it even possible? I don't know.
Yeah.
You can watch the highlights on the BBC website or whatever, but like, I don't genuinely know how you can watch it. And it doesn't do anything to help itself.
And next year they're getting rid of the 50 over competition as well.
Just seems close your eyes and throw the dartboard and see what comes out, really, about half the time.
Channel 4, 2005, yeah. The Ashes. Mm. So, you know, it generally did inspire a generation, obviously. For myself, I was 10 or 11 around that time, and, you know, that's what get, you know, Freddie Flintoff, that get Peterson.
Ashley Giles for you there, mate.
Thank you, and not the non-spinning spinner. But, that gets you, you know, it inspires the generation to become like them.
Absolutely.
So, you know, it's not rocket science, is it, really?
No. I read an article today about suggesting the Lord's Test match every summer should almost be treated like the special occasion that Wimbledon is, and put it on terrestrial and make a massive occasion. We'll see. If we can sit here in a studio in the middle of Cambridge and talk about it, I'm sure people who get paid lots of money in some nice air conditioning offices can come up with some solutions. Anyway, Dan Callum, thank you very much for your contributions today. It's been a thoroughly enjoyable show. If you want to listen back to it, you can do as the show's repeated on Saturday 12 till 1, and also the podcast will be out at ASAP as well. Thanks for listening. We'll be back on Wednesday, fingers crossed, live, never know, and also back on Sunday with Summer Sports Week. Up next after me here on Cambridge 105 Radio is Tim Willett with the New Music Generator, and then on Saturday, and like I said, it gets repeated from 12 till 1 o'clock on Saturday, you can listen to Flavour, which is obviously the fortnightly show dedicated to food and drink. Thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you next Wednesday. Goodbye.
Cambridge 105 Radio.